This episode is brought to you by Factor. Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50. T's and C's apply.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Wow, hope you had a fantastic Mother's Day, should it apply, and a great weekend, but we are back in action. And action is circled and in bold because there is so much action right now in the world domestically, and the market is responding up 1,000 plus points for the futures. Executive orders coming down. We got it all coming your way as the president sets his sights on his first overseas trip. He's going to go to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and then UAE. But what's happening along the way is flat out is staggering. And it's a tough decision, and I'm going to try to get it all in about everything that's going on and what to focus on. But let's go with the breaking news. About 3 o'clock in the morning, it found out we have a deal with China, the framework of a deal, and both sides pretty much agree that unbelievable progress was made over the weekend, and a framework going forward has been outlined. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen shortly, Jonathan Morris, on why he believes this Pope and this president will end up being pals or working together on the world stage. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
President Putin is open for peace negotiations without any preconditions. And this is what he was proposing for the last couple of weeks. He keeps saying that we are ready for negotiations.
Yep, the Russian spokesperson says that he's ready for negotiations. Well, his bluff has been called. Massive news overseas. 101 ceasefire talks are set to take place on Thursday in Turkey. Vladimir Putin and Zelensky right now tapped to square off face to face.
Number two. Look, a lot of Democrats are not happy that he's reemerging as the party's trying to find its way. There's still lingering frustration with how he handled 2024. He's going to go out there and defend himself and defend his record.
Yep, there you go. Dems agree Joe's comeback is bad, and the left thrashed their way through a post-election malaise while taking aim at the emerging moderate in Pennsylvania. Clearly, they think their future is on the far left.
Number one.
We come to agreement that our reciprocal tariff rate will go down to 10% on the United States side, so it goes down 115%. We enter into a 90-day pause period for negotiations.
U.S.-China deal framed out. After two intense days of talks in Switzerland, the U.S. and China have de-escalated massively, and the markets rally massively, over 1,000 points. And let me just tell you, to roughly frame it out, they've agreed on a protocol here forward anytime there's a dispute. Number two, they went from 145% tariffs on Chinese goods. That's what we put it on. They put 125 on us. They are now down to 10% across the board for us and for them, and then an additional 20% until we're satisfied that they're attacking the fentanyl precursors that end up in Mexico, end up killing Americans. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, welcome back, Senator.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I mean, the president is sky high, and he's got a reason to be. First off, from what you know about this trade deal, I can't believe how much they got done in 2 days.
Well, it actually, if you knew how much work President Trump was doing behind the scenes, you wouldn't be. Every time I spoke to him for the last 3 or 4 weeks, it seems like he was either going into a meeting with China or coming out of a meeting with China or being briefed on a meeting about China. He understood that this was of the utmost importance, and he understood that the economy would react as such. It's amazing to me that people doubt President Trump when he literally wrote the book, as you know, Brian, The Art of the Deal. He knows exactly what he's doing. He understood that he was coming from a place of strength. It's no accident that he rolled out the UK first, because, Brian, remember, he said he wanted the UK first in. And then immediately puts his team on a plane and flies to Geneva to negotiate, probably for most parts, a pre-negotiated deal with some face-to-face meetings that needed to take place. and roll it out on Monday, knowing the markets were going to respond. Now, what's the left media going to do? Because they're not going to have anything to talk about this week.
Well, they have a lot to talk about, but they have a lot, but they could choose not to, because this is pretty impressive. And the U.S., you know, sometimes will come out and say one thing and the other side will say something else. For the most part, the Chinese representative seemed very positive. They said they've agreed to resolve a trade war raging between the two largest economies in the world. Scott Bessent said, "I'm happy to report that we made substantial progress. The Swiss government is very kind. And now we have a situation where almost immediately, I think the real focus now is to try to get the supply chain flowing again so you don't have much of a disruption." Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, for the most part, a lot of people had these pre-orders on hold. You know, visiting with when I was visiting with the CEO of the retail stores and of shipping and logistics of Amazon, he was telling me that a lot of people had a tremendous amount of supply already built in place. In fact, they saw a biggest surge of pre-supply than they did, even much more than what they'd see for Christmas. And that he at the time, he said they had about 8 weeks of supply still left, and that was only a couple weeks ago. Right now, they had their pre-orders in place, but that's why he was saying you hadn't seen the spike in goods, which the media kept saying there was a spike, and you and I know that inflation was down by over half, and so there wasn't any spike in goods because people had pre-ordered. So what you're going to see is a backfill, and that backfill will take some time because no one had actually placed orders, so it'll take maybe a few weeks for it to start flowing. But with a 90-day pause, both economies know, especially China, knows what this does for their economy. And there's going to be some real strong negotiations done between now and then. I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't see something come up about Panama or even what's going on in Taiwan.
Well, that's interesting. Panama, because we want to kick those companies that are running the ports over in Panama out. And the TikTok deal is supposedly back on. I'm mainly concerned, Senator, on the metals and magnets that we need for our tech and for our military. Do you have any read on that yet?
Yeah, two things have happened. There was already a supply in it. We have a resupply of some of the rare earth minerals that were already coming through. I can't get too much into it. But there was also companies across the United States that was already pre-stationed for this. Except since they had small quantities, most of the rare earth minerals wasn't being sold actually to them. When China in this dispute started going through with all the tariffs, the suppliers that had the rare earth minerals, those smaller suppliers that necessarily wasn't going to from China, started flowing to the smaller companies. And so the magnets that you were seeing, in fact, there's one actually in Stillwater, Oklahoma, believe it or not, that was having a hard time getting their hands on minerals, and now they're starting to get that in. So we've diversified. Even this short period of time, President Trump did, and I know he knew what he was doing, but he made the market diversify from instead of just going to the easiest source. Now they've diversified their supply chain, which only makes us stronger and U.S. companies stronger.
Interesting. So I guess we'll see from here. Just to give you an idea of the doubts on Sunday. So prior to this deal being announced, they were focusing on the UK deal. The UK ambassador, Peter Mendelssohn, is really positive about this deal, no matter how much you press him. So I just want to play a little of the give and take. Like, he does not want to play these games. He went on with Jake Tapper, and he just pushed back. Every time Jake says, well, this is not big of a deal, he says, it's a huge deal. Cut six.
My read in the British press, I'm going to pin this on the British press, is that you've accepted a worse deal than the UK had before, just to get out from the shadow of the tariff threat. Is it that you guys perhaps rushed to be first before all other countries?
I literally didn't understand the logic of that. The fact is that...
Well, you're paying more tariff than you were before, right? That's part of it.
Well, in some cases, but in other cases, we're not. I mean, in some cases, we're down to zero. So, and in other cases, for example, in autos, we've got absolutely secure quotas for exports to the United States. So it's a good deal, and I'm very pleased that we've achieved it, but now we have to build on it.
So he just doesn't understand it. And he said, and they tried to get him, well, you said some bad things about the president before. He said, yeah, in the past, but we're past that. We're moving forward. So it's like the media is desperate to create the old intramural fights.
They want to be divisive because if it bleeds, it leads. And you know this in the media. If it nobody wants a good story, a good news story, especially if you listen to CNN or MSNBC or any other major network other than Fox, you don't want to hear positive about what's happening with President Trump and this economy. You want to show that it's all gloom and doom when it's actually a tremendous amount of good news. Well, the backstory that they're not telling about UK here is they had some issues because of the Ukraine war with some ag products. I'm trying to be as vague as possible, but some ag products. What we have done in the United States is we've secured that ag line for them. So they're not talking about that good of a deal. They're not talking about the situation that the negotiations that took place with UK was also about being reliable and resilient and making both of our economies reliant and resilient on top of each other, mm-hmm. meaning that we're intertwined again, and our economies are going to be even stronger because of it. It's familiar to what we look like when we came out mm-hmm. of the war, when we needed UK to stand up really quick, but without taking advantage of us anymore. And when they have, once again, reliable supply chains, especially when it comes to ag products. And we're not trying to take business away from Ukraine, but the truth is it's puts a lot of nervousness in the market, and it causes our food prices to go up. When they have a secure supply chain that can come in and backfill what they can't get out of Ukraine, it brings stability. And the UK and all of Europe's market right. has been very unstable since the Ukraine war.
So let's talk about Ukraine war. And it looks as though Thursday, they're on paper, there's going to be a face-to-face meeting between Zelensky and Vladimir Putin, even though they said, let's get a 30-day ceasefire and then set up talks. He said no. And here's what his press secretary said yesterday about the chances is coming down. Cut 21.
President Putin is open for peace negotiations without any preconditions. And this is what he was proposing for last couple of weeks. He keeps saying that we are ready for negotiations, for direct negotiations.
But direct negotiations is different than being very close to a deal, as President Trump said. Were you close to a deal?
Yes. Well, Ukraine settlement is a very complicated thing. It is not as simple as to just to sign one paper, A4 size.
And you get it. But bottom line is, your thoughts about how Russians are playing this. Story in the Hill today that the Russians and Iranians are coordinating to string all this out.
Well, what you're seeing is a little stability coming across the world right now. Underneath Biden, you saw a tremendous amount of destabilization because he led from a point of appeasement when it comes to foreign affairs. When you start negotiating deals with China, which was backfilling Russia, and Russia was also sustaining their market there because of the crude oil and the petroleum products they were putting on the black market to China, knowing that now the negotiating deal and a trade deal is on the table with China, that black market, it will probably have to stop. I don't know this, but I would say I guarantee you that's part of negotiations with China, is like, you can't take this embargoed oil and these sanctions that we put on, yeah. on Russia anymore. And so now Russia is saying, hold on a second, we're going to do something because we can't backfill our hoppers, our money hoppers, by going to China. So we have to negotiate a deal. And then you're seeing Iran, they're in a mess, right? After the IDF blew up everybody that they were supporting with terrorists, they have to renegotiate where they're moving from too. And it puts the president in a strength position to negotiate in China, or with China taking away their black market from Russia. And so now Russia is going to have to come to the table with Ukraine. People don't understand how tied in the world is and how tied in they're to the U.S. economy and why people need to do business with us. And when you have a president that strength is his main focus and negotiating from strength, then you have the rest of the world that starts paying attention. Right. You create stability, and that's exactly what's happening here. So I don't know. You've got two presidents with Putin and with Zelensky that are very hard to actually trust completely. So it's hard to say, because in the deal it's their countries that they got to negotiate for. But the fact that they're willing to come to the table now, we'll see if they actually show up. But the willing that they're willing to come to the table and have a face-to-face conversation, will tell you if that happens, then they are actually close to a deal, because Russia sees their economy is going to take a huge hit if China normalizes relationships with Russia, with the United States again.
And the thing is, too, Zelensky has done the right thing. I mean, he's basically helping to keep conversation going with Trump, let him know that he's there. So don't let intermediaries get in the way.
Right.
Any problem, he's told to call Trump right away. And Trump said, that's what I want. And basically, they went from a 30-day demand for a ceasefire to, if Trump wants me to go on Thursday, I'm going on Thursday. So
that's right.
Let's see what happens. Senator, crazy times. And we have Eden Alexander getting out today. He's the last known American alive in Gaza.
Well, let's talk about all the Americans that the president's got that have been sitting and rotting in prison since Biden was in office. And in Russia, by the way, and we're not giving away, you know, the doctor of death to Russia to get a WNBA basketball player out. We're getting these people out because people want to do favors for the United States right now. Because once again, we're coming from a place for peace through strength. And this is what you have when you have a strong leader. I can't express that enough. President Trump has made this a strong focus. And let's not forget about Steve Witkoff, who is literally volunteering his time because he's President Trump's best friend. That has been flying back and forth to Russia and back and forth to Israel on his own dime, not taking a single penny from the government, and been negotiating all these deals. He's a real estate tycoon, really not someone you think that would be negotiating hostages release or peace deals, but he's also a negotiator like President Trump that understands the art of the deal. And this is when you have someone that President Trump put someone in that's competent to do the job, not put him in there because he's trying to fit some DEI quota.
All right. Thanks so much, Senator Mark Limon. A lot of moving parts. Press conference today for the pharmaceutical announcement, and then the president at 10:45 Eastern time will be heading overseas. Busy time. Senator Mark Limon, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. And then is the Pope and the president going to get along? Jonathan Morris says yes. He'll explain.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Every idea starts with a problem. Warby Parker's was simple. Glasses are too expensive. So they set out to change that. By designing glasses in-house and selling directly to customers, they're able to offer prescription eyewear that's expertly crafted and unexpectedly affordable. Warby Parker glasses are made from premium materials like impact-resistant polycarbonate and custom acetate. And they start at just $95, including prescription lenses. Get glasses made from the good stuff. Stop by a Warby Parker store near you.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is a serious problem for Democrats. Less than 1 in 4 Democrats under 30 say they're proud to be an American. 54% say they're embarrassed by it. Embarrassed? Like America's your mom picking you up at school? You're embarrassed to be an American? Well, guess what? The feeling's mutual, because you have no perspective.
That is totally true. And Bill Maher, again, talking about Democrats, he's definitely a Democrat, was critical of Trump last week. But this week, he's just pointing out that more and more people who are anti-American, instead of that being the way it is, now it's a, why do you think that way? And I'll give you an example. It wasn't too long ago when, if you had a flag on your car, it was triggering. How dare you bring a flag out? And people would put it away, actually. How crazy was that? I mean, I was never one of those people, but I was amazed that we were just accepting the way things were. And I think that for Democrats, they just have a lot of America-hating people in their midst. And a lot of them are involved in these college protests. You know, you think it's anti-Semitic, and it is, but it's also anti-West, which is anti-U.S. When we come back, we'll open up this conversation with Jonathan Morris, talk about him just got back from the Vatican, and find out about this Pope, who clearly is, one thing is clear, a White Sox fan, not a Cubs fan.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, the Catholic Church has elected the first ever Pope from America. And as an American Catholic, I could not be more proud, which is a sin, and now I'm ashamed. The Vatican has selected Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost, who is from the south side of Chicago, to be the new Pope And you can tell he's from the South Side because he's got his hands up. I also love that conservatives are already complaining that this Pope is too woke. How woke can a 69-year-old man from Chicago be? It's not like he came out and was like, hey, I'm Pope Leo the 14th, he, him. The reality is there are no woke Catholics. If you're a woke Catholic, you're just not Catholic anymore.
So that's pretty funny. That was SNL obviously having some fun with the new Pope. Somebody who's all over this is Jonathan Morris, a theologian. That's how we title you now. Former priest. Now you were doing a fantastic job in the coverage. I commend you as I emailed you. Tell me what it was like when you found out it was an American Pope. As much as you thought it through, were you thinking this?
I was waiting for a name that I could barely pronounce.
Right. Who you never heard of.
I'm talking to the coordinating producer right there on set, and we have 133 names. And it could have been anyone. It could have been a non-cardinal. It could have been any baptized male. Could have been the Pope. You could have been the Pope, Brian. I know that's what you were thinking.
I'm a little disappointed.
But we had all the list of names, and they were also going to say the name in Latin. So you add names that you can't even pronounce, and then they're translating them into Latin. So I was getting ready to say, go down the list fast, tell the audience who had just been elected.
Right.
And then they came out with a guy from South Chicago.
And it was pretty amazing.
It was amazing.
Right. So what could you tell us about the process?
The process is, and on the one hand, secret, because we don't know who voted for whom, and they all take an oath of secrecy not to say anything.
Right.
On the other hand, it's extremely transparent because there's a public constitution that was drafted and updated by John Paul II and then later updated even by Pope Francis, that it lays out exactly what's done, every single step. And it's paper ballots. Everyone has one vote. You have to have identification in order to vote. It's your cardinal outfit.
Yeah.
It's pretty clear. And it's 133. You have to get to two-thirds majority. And it's just a question of, we'd call it politicking or call it humanizing. You have to figure out not only who do you want, but then who do you not want. And so that's how the strategy works.
The one guy you work with on the radio, Cardinal Dolan, who's got this biggest profile in America because he's got the most popular church, St. Patrick's, or most famous church, St. Patrick's. Did he play a role behind the scenes?
Well, he certainly played a role as a voter, but he also played a role that people look up to him. And I would say especially the non-Europeans, and that is a bigger block than ever before. So 133, 52 of them were European. Everybody else was either from North America, South America, Asia, Africa, or beyond. Especially the Asians and Africans have a love for for Cardinal Dolan, and they trust him. And there was a big push by the Italians especially to get an Italian, somebody who was very aligned to Pope Francis, namely the number two guy, Parolin. And it seems that he probably had a lot of votes at the first and second voting, but then couldn't get beyond that. And I have no doubt, as the Italian newspapers have said very publicly, that Cardinal Dolan, they called him, was a kingmaker.
So that's pretty amazing, but not surprising because he's so outgoing and you know him as personally too. So I want to bring you to who the Pope is. So he grows up in Chicago. We know his brother was on Fox and Friends on Saturday, outspoken, can't believe his little brother is Pope. So what do you think that says, how do you think, since you know President Trump and you know who this Pope is or where he's from, they're going to run across each other sooner or later, whether it's going to be intentional or unintentional. How do you think they're going to get along, being that he was critical of Trump, according to his X account?
Yeah, if you want to know whether this Pope planned on being Pope, you know he didn't, because he would have deleted his Twitter account.
Right.
So he walked in, he left his clothes and his luggage back at the little hotel where he was staying. He did not delete his Twitter account. And yes, there were some critical things there of J.D. Vance, President Trump, the administration. But always respectful. It wasn't like a kind of sarcastic, off-the-cuff type comment. I think this Pope is going to be outspoken about social issues, especially having to do with war, peace, lots of things that are going to touch on what's going on in the world today, including immigration. But he is a much more intellectually rigorous Pope. an intellectually rigorous communicator than Pope Francis was.
Right.
And I think President Trump, Vice President Vance have a great opportunity to actually enter into really positive dialogue. Pope Leo is going to be very respectful and very interesting.
See, Pope Francis didn't look too thrilled to meet Vice President Vance, and then he died the next day. I think it's unrelated, but I think that this could be different because although he was critical of J.D. Vance, he goes, I disagree with him on one other issue on the X account. But, I mean, do you go see the Pope or does the Pope come see you? Do you think he's going to be doing American press? Is this guy going to be out there a little bit more?
I think he will be out there. I doubt he will come to the United States right away. I think he's careful not to tell the rest of the world, I'm American. He wants to show that he truly is a universal shepherd. His linguistic skills are excellent. Perfect Italian, perfect Spanish.
Wow.
Very, very good Latin, and he speaks French as well.
Wow.
But yes, I think he will enter into the debate, and I think it will be in a interesting way, not a sarcastic way, not an off-the-cuff way. He will say, let's talk about immigration, for example. The fact that you have a right to emigrate, meaning a human right to leave one's country, doesn't necessarily mean – this is according to church teaching, social doctrine, which he has a licentiate in. It doesn't mean that you have a right to enter every country. And not only that, Catholic social teaching would say politicians have not only a right but an obligation to have sustainable and safe immigration.
Right.
That's according to Catholic teaching. If you get into the nuances of it. And Pope Leo XIV knows those nuances.
Well, I hope so, because he was critical of the immigration talk and the building of walls and things like that, right?
Listen, he had a Twitter account. it's not very deep.
Right.
It's truly not very deep. And yes, of course, he will be critical of President Trump's administration when he thinks that it's going against basic human rights, et cetera. But he will back it up with true dialogue and intellectual rigor.
I was kind of relieved that when it became clear that he was Pope, and an hour later everyone was looking at his social media, I'm thinking to myself, if Trump sees this, I was so afraid that he was going to hit the roof and say, what happened here? Let's vote again. Get rid of this guy. But instead, he said a bunch of nice things, right?
Yeah, it was a perfect tone. Perfect tone. He said, what an honor for this country. And it is.
Yeah.
It was always the traditional wisdom that no American could be Pope because just too much power in the hands of one country. You got the American presidency, you have the richest country in the world, and then you also have the Pope.
And we got the World Cup.
And we have the World Cup. And Brian Kilmeade show.
Right. Coming. I mean, in the same thing. So we'll see what happens. But ultimately, do you think is he the type of guy that will decide something radical, like letting priests marry or letting women play a bigger role in the church? Does he profile that way?
I think he will make big changes in, for example, in common sense stuff, like that has nothing to do with the theological basis of the Catholic Church, but women and more decision-making authority, absolutely. Pope Francis began some of that, and I would agree with that. Pope Francis has put women in charge of big departments in the Vatican, and I'm glad that he has, and I think Pope Leo XIV will do that as well.
All right, so where does he make his first visit? Like, he had his first mass, right?
Yes. My guess is that anything that Pope Francis already had on the docket, and he had some pretty far-flung places scheduled, he will at least consider going.
Really?
Because they've started already all the preparations, and they've done all that. So he'll at least take a look at it. I doubt he'll come to the United States first, but I think he'll come to the United States soon.
So Pope Francis dies. He never went to Argentina after he was Pope. Does that show bitterness there? I don't know.
He was afraid of getting involved in Argentinian politics. I don't know exactly why he was that concerned, but typically there's been a lot of tension between the church and political forces in Argentina. It's just a very different world.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not want to get wrapped up in that.
What are the finances like with the church? Can we keep hearing the challenges of financing and the corruption that was involved? He wouldn't think to associate both, but it's a fact, right?
Yeah. The Vatican, the Curia, is still an Italian institution, Brian, with worldwide tentacles. Nothing against Italians. I lived there for 9 years, and I never.
They're not known as great accountants.
I never go out to Irish food for dinner either. I go out to Italian. So there's amazing things in Italy, but there's a lot of forces that are not for, that. You know, you have to take them on. Pope Francis tried that. He brought Cardinal Pell from Australia to brought him in, put him in charge of the financial systems. He got run out of town.
Really?
He got run out of town.
Because he was clamping down.
He brought in a Western a Big Four accounting firm and said, open the books. And everyone said, oh, no, you don't. That's not. And
how ridiculous is that?
Yeah. So
why was that accepted?
We'll see what Pope. I'm very happy that Pope Leo XIV also spent the last 2 years inside the Vatican, working as the head of the Department of, mm-hmm. of appointing bishops. He knows how the place runs, mm-hmm. And he's an astute administrator. So yes, the Vatican is like $90 million in debt annually. That's not very much, but they have massive debts in terms of the pension obligations they have, and that means you have to get all of your properties and financial stuff in order. It could be fixed relatively soon.
All right, so you don't see him at a White Sox game. You don't think he's going to be an everyman pope, but you do think there's an excellent chance, Jonathan Morris, that he'll be friendly with Trump.
I think he will enter into respectful dialogue with Trump.
And he's a biology major or math major?
A mathematician, yeah. Exactly. And he's also a canon lawyer. Pope Francis kind of criticized anybody who was too conservative or with the law. This is a canon lawyer. It's pretty ironic.
All right, Jonathan Morris, thanks so much. Fantastic job over there.
Thank you, Brian.
A really great job. So we'll see if the president and the Pope will be friends, like Reagan and Pope John Paul II, right?
I hope they are.
All right, let's see it. The world will be a better place. Back in a moment, Brian Kilmeade Show. Historic day, by the way. There's so many other things going on, too, in terms of peace deal, ongoing talks with Iran, a hostage getting out of Israel. Could there be direct talks between Russia and Ukraine on Thursday? And we got this major pharmaceutical story, major discounts, as well as what happened with the U.S. and China over in Switzerland. And that's just off the top of my head. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I want to see if we can do this peacefully, right? President Trump has the capability, we've seen it many times before, right now to put maximum pressure on Iran, use that tough language, and see if we can get the dismantling of those nuclear facilities. If not, I'd like to see President Trump say that he will dismantle it one way or another. Let the Iranians know, again, all options are on the table.
Yeah, I like that. And the reason why I think this is an important comment, that was a Democrat, congressman, Jewish, from Florida, Congressman Jared Moskowitz, saying, look, he's been tough before. Can you imagine that? And let's see him be tough again. They're trying to assassinate our leaders, John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, Brian Hook, Donald Trump, trying to kill them all, right? And we're talking with them. I give him credit for talking to him, but does anybody think this is going to go anywhere? Story in the Hill today that you have Iran and Russia trying to string out Trump by giving him the hope of some type of deal, diplomatic deal, and just string him out as long as possible. Meanwhile, Iran gets closer to a bomb, and Russia gets closer to maybe, if we don't give them more weapons, destroying Ukraine entirely. But that's one thing. Look, I know you got to talk before you bomb, but that's where we're going to end up. Cut 34, Ted Cruz.
It's worth noting the Ayatollah right now today is actively trying to murder Donald J. Trump, has hired hitmen trying to murder the president of the United States. The Ayatollah is also actively trying to murder the former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and the former National Security Advisor, John Bolton. They have hired hitmen that are targeting former senior U.S. officials and the sitting president of the United States. These are not people who can be trusted, which is why the objective must be full dismantlement, must be the centrifuges disassembled, destroyed, taken out. And as President Trump said recently, we can do that either nicely or not so nicely. nicely if they agree and we go in and dismantle them ourselves, or not so nicely is if Iran refuses to negotiate, we have the capability to take out these nuclear facilities.
Yeah, and Senator Ted Cruz is 100% right. What I also think helps with the Russia-Ukraine situation is that the Senate, which he's a part of and signed on to, 70 senators have signed on to a piece of legislation presented by Lindsey Graham to use sanctions on Russia, their central bank, and anybody buying any goods from Russia, period. That includes India, mostly oil, China, mostly oil, North Korea. You're all going to get sanctioned. And you sanction the central bank for every transaction. So if you walk away from these talks, if you don't sincerely approach these talks, then things aren't going to go back to the way they were with you just bombing arbitrarily, mandating everybody serve in the military except rich people, and also recruiting Yemenis as well as North Koreans. Oksana Marikova talks about the relationship that is flourishing between and trust between Zelensky and Trump, and that now they are speaking regularly. Cut 26.
President Zelensky and President Trump had a number of great meetings, starting from last September, if you remember, in New York. We will focus on the future, and sometimes friends can disagree, but that's disagreement among friends. We all have the same goals of sovereign and prosperous Ukraine, as we have heard from our leadership and your leadership. And we all have the same goal on doing something together to the benefit of our nations.
And that's good. That's typical Democrat, diplomat talking about this. But here's what's going to happen. We asked for a ceasefire. They didn't give it. Thursday, they say, let's have a one-on-one in Istanbul on Thursday. So Zelensky doesn't answer and says, I don't believe you. You just sent 100 drones into our country on Sunday, and now you want to talk about a peace talks on Thursday? You know what Trump said? Do it. And Zelensky says, I'll do it. Now, does Vladimir Putin show up? How does he not show up? He calls the meeting. Zelensky says, I'll be there. And then if you don't show up, it's clear there's no deal that's to be had. And that means Trump should not back out. He should arm up Ukrainians. He should maximize sanctions. And Vladimir Putin, you had your one entree back into economic ties with the U.S. and the West that could have taken place, and you're blowing it. If you don't show up on Thursday, I'm not convinced you're not going to show up. I mean, doesn't he want big moments on the stage? Maybe. Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. We got our Fox Nation stage shows coming up June 21st in Daytona, August 23rd in Dallas, Texas, and then in Richmond, Virginia on the 27th of September. BrianKilmeade.com.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Not everyone is careful with your personal information, which might explain why there's a victim of identity theft every 5 seconds in the U.S. Fortunately, there's LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year by visiting LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Of course, if you're in the Northeast, you had great weather for your Mother's Day. We're back in action today. And can I just circle and put in bold and underline the word action? So much going on. And this hour, we'll talk to a couple of people about it, Michael Goodwin and Chairman Brian Still, the House Administrative Committee Chair, and he's going to be with us shortly. I mean, the stunning news, it almost like made no one void the Sunday shows when they were talking about the economy and the trade deals and China. And next thing you know, so much got done. So before we get to Michael, let me expand on a little bit. The President of the United States is having an impromptu press conference. And I say that because I'm sure it wasn't planned until all the news broke in a matter of 24 hours ago, and now he's having a series of announcements with the HHS secretary and his staff around him. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
President Putin is open for peace negotiations without any preconditions. And this is what he was proposing for the last couple of weeks.
Yep, massive.
We keep saying that we are ready for negotiations.
Massive news overseas. One-on-one ceasefire talks between Zelensky and Putin. First, they want just a 30-day ceasefire. When Putin says, no, I'd rather meet you face-to-face, Zelensky shocked him and said yes. It's happening Thursday.
Number two.
Look, a lot of Democrats are not happy that he's reemerging as the party's trying to find its way. There's still lingering frustration with how he handled 2024. He's going to go out there and defend himself and defend his record.
Really? So that's a little bit about what was happening. And he was defending himself and his record. I'm talking about Dems agreeing that Joe's got to go as Biden comes out and tries to get ahead of two hit books to talk about what they say the facts behind the scenes of a president totally detached and unable to do the job for 4 years.
Number one.
We come to agreement that that our reciprocal tariff rate will go down to 10% on the United States side, so it goes down 115%. We enter into a 90-day pause period for negotiations.
Well, there you go. U.S.-China deal framed out. After two intense days of talks in Switzerland, the U.S. and China have de-escalated massively, and that's what the president's talking about right now. And I'll bring Michael Goodwin to talk about that. Michael, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian.
Here's the president moments ago talking about the deal framed out with China, which knocked tariffs down from 145, 125, U.S. and China respectively, to now 30 and 10. Listen.
The talks in Geneva were very friendly. The relationship is very good. We're not looking to hurt China. China was being hurt very badly. They were closing up factories. They were having a lot of unrest. And they were very happy to be able to do something with us. And the relationship is very, very good. I'll speak to President Xi maybe at the end of the week. We have some other things we're doing.
There you go. They have really de-escalated. We think there's rare earth is going to begin to come over here again, along with the magnets needed for our military. And we'll see how that you see how the economy responds. The market right now up 1,000 points.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I think that this is, so far anyway, vindication for the president's strategy. I mean, it was a wild day on April 2nd, Liberation Day. The markets crashed instantly. And I think ever since then, there's been this gnawing question of how is this going to be resolved? The market slowly crept back, I think, realizing it had been an overreaction, and the president took some interim steps to give people more confidence that he wasn't tearing up the entire global economy. Nonetheless, if this is a good deal for America, if it does protect American jobs and, in fact, boost American jobs and limit in some ways, at least through tariffs, Chinese imports that are hurting those American jobs, then this will have been well worth it. And I think the president, as I say, will be vindicated by this strategy.
Right. And we'll see, because I was shocked and heartened that China had pretty much the same things to say. You know, we made great progress. There's a mechanism in place to work out our problems from here on in. And it was at three in the morning, I watched the press conference from Switzerland. And they said the one thing that China did say for 4 years, we were trying to have these talks. We could not have these talks. Now, had a lot to do with you poisoning the world with your pandemic that you denied, and you didn't follow through in your phase one of the deal you cut with Trump. But having said that, that was not personally involved with Biden. Why he couldn't get it going again to try to get something to rebalance our trade relationships? We are $290 billion in deficit to China, and it went up 5% last year and 40% over the last 5 years. So why don't we rebalance? They have to start buying our stuff. They have to do a better job as consumers. Is that possible is the question.
Well, look, I think there's another dimension to this, too, of course, which is national security. Remember the balloon floating over the heartland of America and all of that, and the sense that Biden was always looking to pacify rather than confront. And what Trump's view is, no, we are going to confront them on their aggressions, whether it be economic or military. And so I think that's a big difference. And China really needed a deal with America. I mean, I think we only saw the tip of the iceberg as to what was happening within China, but Trump alluded to it there. I mean, when the factories are closing and you have massive unemployment all of a sudden, that's a very shaky thing for any government, and China is not immune in that sense. And so the fact that whole towns were without work because the export market had dried up. That was a big event in China, and so I think they needed a deal too. So look, this is one of those that we hope increases or expands an American success in the sense of the economy, in the sense of jobs, in the sense of investment in this country, which are really the main things that President Trump is trying to achieve.
So he also made a major announcement. He said, I'm going to have a major announcement before I leave on this trip. What is it? CBS thought they had it when it comes to prescription drugs. And he put in a long message on Truth Social. This is essentially it. He's signing a prescription drug deal, an executive order, that will prices will be reduced almost immediately by 30 to 80%. They will rise throughout the world in order to equalize and, for the first time in many years, bring fairness to America. I'll be instituting a most favored nations policy where the United States will pay the same price as the nation that pays the lowest price anywhere in the world. Our country will finally be treated fairly, and our citizens' health care costs will be reduced by numbers never seen before. Additionally, on top of everything else, the United States will save trillions of dollars. So what they're going to say is whatever it's costing. And when I asked, you know, Dr. Siegel today, I said, well, how do you do that? What if they say, no, it costs more? Well, Medicare buys all these drugs, like 70% of all our drugs they buy in bulk. He goes, we're just going to tell them we're paying this price, and they should get used to it.
Look, this has been another bone of contention for a long time, which is that these companies sell the same products in different countries, but Americans pay a higher price. I mean, this story of people going to Canada or getting their medications from Canada, you know, by mail, has been around for a long time. And look, the issue has always been America has the pipeline for development, the safety protocols that you can trust the medicine, whereas if it's developed somewhere else, can you trust it or not?
Yeah.
So there have been a lot of dimensions to this issue, and we'll have to see if it delivers the goods this way so that you Americans can buy them at lower cost, but they are still safe. That's going to be the big rub. And look, this is a president, I think, big picture, Brian, who is taking action.
Everywhere. I mean, everywhere.
He doesn't sleep, right? Forward, all the time. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, the other thing is we got Eden Alexander getting out of Gaza. He's the American that's also a dual citizen that was captured October 7th, and it looks like we're getting him out. Now, the Israelis are kind of ticked off at us. They didn't know about the Houthi deal that says you can keep shooting at Israel, just not at us. They really didn't know about Eden Alexander. They were not asked to give anything up for him, but they are wondering how good of an ally we are. But Trump is not there to please Benjamin Netanyahu. But I just think in the end, we'll be taking out Iran's weapons with Netanyahu.
Well, that's the big if, right? I mean, I think that you're right that there's a lot of concern in Israel that there's a lot of daylight between Trump and Netanyahu now, and the fact that he's not planning to visit Israel on the trip to Saudi and Qatar and the UAE is a concern in Israel. If you read the Israeli press, there's a lot of worrying that Trump is pushing Israel away, and you know it may involved any deal with Hamas. I mean, getting the American hostage out is one thing, but there's still a lot of Israeli hostages. I mean, are we exempting Hamas in some way? Are we cozying up to Qatar? And what what is this thing with the airplane from Qatar? All of these things, I think, are adding up. But you're right. The ultimate issue is Iran and the nuclear facilities. And that still is up in the air, what America will do. I've been confused myself by differing things that Witkoff and Trump and others have said about what is America's objective, what is America's bottom line. I hope, along with most Israelis, it means the end of any enrichment so that this threat doesn't resurface in 6 months or 5 years.
Yeah, the Hill has a story that Russia is working with Iran in order to string us out. I think if Trump is aware of that, he'll be extremely cognizant of it. My hope is somebody's reading these stories, because they are manipulative. The Iranians are, and they are working Saudi Arabia. They know the president's going there. They had two meetings with a high-ranking official there. What could they be up to? I'm not sure. So those are just a few of the things. India, Pakistan, we got them to stand down for now, so that should be interesting. Michael, a lot going on. And I'll tell you, the worst thing you could do is judge this president at 100 days. Think about what has happened since that 100-day mark. How much different his economic numbers would be and foreign policy numbers would be when these deals start to close, right?
Right. Well, and don't forget, Brian, when the 100 days, I said that you have to divide it into two. The tariff was the big negative, or at least the ball in the air that hadn't landed at that point. But look what he did on the border. I mean, that alone is such an amazing accomplishment. And some of the cultural issues, taking on the colleges on anti-Semitism, the whole thing of these transgender men and women's sports. I mean, issues that nobody else would touch. He took them on immediately and had big impact right out of the gate. This is still something to be remembered.
Right. And keep in mind, too, he's going to bat for the Massapequa Chiefs because he believes political correctness is making them change their logo and their nickname. So big and small, he's fighting it out. His Secretary of Education is working on that, too. So thanks so much. Appreciate it, Michael Goodwin.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
All right. Bottom of the hour, Congressman Michael Still, Brian Still. And also, we're going to continue to update you on the president. He's been speaking now for 20 straight minutes, and now he's on to the part which is really the intent of the press conference. He's talking about the price of drug disparity, because there's other breaking stories that he's right in the middle of, too. Don't move.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
PMS, pregnancy, menopause. Being a woman is a lot. Olly supports you and yours with expert solutions for every age and life stage. They just launched two new products exclusively at Walmart. Period Hero combats bloat, mood swings, and more during PMS. And Balance Perimeno to support hormonal balance, mood, and metabolism during perimenopause. Grab yours at Olly.com.
Olly!
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Starting today, the United States will no longer subsidize the health care of foreign countries, which is what we were doing. We're subsidizing others' health care. Countries where they paid a small fraction of what for the same drug that what we pay many, many times more for. And we'll no longer tolerate profiteering and price gouging from Big Pharma, but again, it was really the countries that forced Big Pharma to do things that, frankly, I'm not sure they really felt comfortable doing. But they've gotten away with it, these countries. European Union has been brutal.
So I was talking to Caroline Leavitt before she came on the air today on Fox and Friends. And I always try to talk to the guests before they come on. You know, sometimes they have something to say right away. They go, please ask me about this. And I go, okay, I'll ask you. You know, even a lot of times if you ask them a question, it either loosens them up or they help you make news. Like, I just got this information. I always try to talk to them for various different reasons. She says she really has never seen a day like this. And she was sitting there. She's got a young child, and on Mother's Day, thought she'd take maybe a half hour off, and she couldn't because of what was happening over in Switzerland, what was happening in Ukraine, what was happening in Israel, the Alexander's release, what was happening with Pakistan and India. what's happening, getting ready for the trip in Saudi Arabia, what she is taking, UAE and Qatar. You got to worry about everything, you know, every little thing that goes on, whether it's with press is coming along, what are going to be the accommodations, president can't be held up, who's going to agree, all that stuff. And then you have the events that have taken place. Now the president's having a press conference, talk about this executive order when it comes to pharmaceuticals. And what he said, and Bobby Kennedy's now speaking now, he said, and what they're going to do is try to get drug prices down almost right away. And they're going to get, they're going to say, we will pay as much as the person who pays the least for that drug. Instead of paying the most, and you said the right, we're going to set the price. And then it was brought up to me that we buy it wholesale for Medicare and Medicaid, and that's where the power is going to be, let alone the individual hospitals and things of that nature. And that's why he's taking it on. And what Robert Kennedy said as HHS secretary says, listen, there is a pharmaceutical lobbyist for every single member of Congress, including the Supreme Court, and some as many as three. So as President Trump has taken money from the pharmaceutical company, $100 million. The only difference is he can't be bought. Yeah, you can give me money. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. That's what he's trying to say. The plane thing, I don't understand. I really don't understand it. We're getting it from Qatar. It's a gift. I guess they have an extra. But I wouldn't want a plane from Qatar because I wouldn't know what's inside of it. Is it going to be listening devices inside of it? I'd like to know that an American company bought it. So they said it's going to give it to them. I'm not sure ethically if it can work out. But I'm sure that's what everyone's going to be talking about today. Not the China deal. Not the trip to Saudi Arabia. Not the pharmaceutical companies. However, I'm watching. CNN is not taking it. They're doing their China report. MSNBC is taking the press conference now. Now Dr. Oz is speaking. RFK just spoke. By the way, his voice is getting better. And then I think that Bhattachary and Macquarie are also fantastic communicators. So I think this is just fascinating to see the guys show up to talk about what's going to happen. Is there anything more universal than talking about getting drug prices down? What else can you afford if drug prices are down? Maybe you have some excess income, or maybe insurance is paying for it anyway, and they're going to have less. They're going to be paying less, which makes them more solvent. So when we come back, I'm going to be joined by Chairman Brian Stiles, and he's going to be coming to us from Wisconsin, but he's on the House Administrative Committee. And I got to talk about the big, beautiful bill over the weekend. Man, if you look at the details about what has to be worked out still to get the House to pass their version by Memorial Day, it is huge, huge mountains to climb. And I am wondering why they're waiting till now, middle of May, to climb them. But people, I guess, need a massive deadline. So the massive pharmaceutical news, the news overseas, the news on Eden Alexander from Gaza, we'll keep you up to date and all. Don't move.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's too big to fail. It's got to be. It's got to happen. The Republicans have complete control of government. They have the House, the Senate, and the White House. They've got to get it done, and the Trump presidency is on the line. And this whole talk about having a tax increase on the top members, you know, Trump tweeted out that, well, George H.W. Bush did it, and he broke his Read My Lips, No New Taxes pledge. When he did that, that was to get Democratic votes because the Democrats controlled the House and Senate. The idea that the Republican Party would have a tax increase in an all-Republican bill, if you're not even doing it to get Democrats on board, is insanity.
That is Mark Thiessen yesterday on Fox News Sunday. With me right now in studio is Chairman Brian Stiles. We appreciate you being here, Brian, from Wisconsin, but really via D.C., where you're spending almost all your time now, right?
Back and forth in Wisconsin on the weekends and D.C. during the week.
I don't know how you do that. But a couple of things. First off, before we get into the big, beautiful bill, your reaction to what the president's talking about now, from what you understand about his Truth Social post last night, and that is the crushing of pharmaceutical costs.
A lot of details are going to come out, but here's the bottom line is I think Americans are sick and tired of people freeloading off the United States of America. That's true where our Western European allies weren't meeting their treaty obligations for NATO. It's true in the healthcare system where we see other countries, in particular Western Europe, Japan, Korea, and others, getting discounts that American hardworking families are paying for. And so finally, President Trump is standing up and saying, in America, we're not going to let other countries freeload off of us. Right. We want to make sure that drug development continues. There's ways to do that. I want to read the details on this, but I think it's great the president's standing up and saying we're not going to let other countries freeload off the United States.
So he mentioned the pharmaceutical lobby, and RFK just said there's one pharmaceutical lobbyist for every member of Congress and sometimes three, even including the Supreme Court. And he said the president's taking $100 million from pharmaceutical lobby, only he just doesn't do what they tell him. Do you notice, is that a strong lobby?
I think it's actually fading over time. I mean, I think it really was years ago. I've been in Congress only since 2018. I think it's a fraction of what it used to be. But that said, time is now to actually just do what's right. And that's where President Trump is so good, is he'll lean in to actually get the end result. He's not a career politician, somebody that built his life running for office. You have somebody that came in with a business background, doesn't need to be there, doesn't need the job. So he has the opportunity to really rip the Band-Aid off a lot of these policies that have been sitting around for a long time that nobody had the courage to stand up and talk
about. How do you feel about what we know about the China deal, where tariffs dropped from 145 to 30? And for China, they drop ours down from 125 to 10. And now have a mechanism now to continue to negotiate with a 90-day pause. What does that do for your job? What do you think it does for the economy? I know the market has gained roughly around 1,000 points.
I think we have a big opportunity, big picture, to get to free, fair, and reciprocal trade, meaning other people are buying American products. And the president has done a good job, in particular with our allies. We'll get to China in a second. But with our allies, as we bring those trade agreements into place, that gives us the opportunity to pivot and really address China, who is the biggest abuser of trade across the globe. And so this is more of a pause for 90 days to say, is China ready and willing to come to the table and actually stop abusing the trade agreements that were entered into and finally have a say for American workers, American farmers?
Guess we'll see what happens. But now we know this. The market seems to like that. Anyone who says on so-called Liberation Day, all that money's been gained back. And then we'll see how it goes with Japan, see how it goes with India, which I think could be next. These individual agreements and the realignment that could happen. Now, meanwhile, you guys have to focus on what you're doing. And that is making the tax cuts from 2017 permanent, as well as reinforcing defense and finding a way to save trillions of dollars. It seems, what is your biggest challenge for this?
It's going to be getting everybody to come together. It's a narrow majority in the House, but this is where we have been underestimated and overperformed time and again. To get this country back on track after four horrific years of the Biden administration, we need to do a couple things. We need to extend the Trump tax cuts that gave us the prosperity as we headed into the pandemic when real wages were growing, inflation was in check, and the economy was strong. We have to make sure that those are permanent. And then the other side of this is making sure that we're controlling spending. And some of this that's now coming out in legislative text where we're actually going to hold people accountable, not give a free pass for states to allow illegal immigrants to be on Medicaid programs, to actually strengthen those programs for their core and original purpose, which is to help the most vulnerable, but not to be a hammock, in particular for able-bodied childless adults.
I mean, the way I understand it, Medicaid has been totally abused, and Obamacare blew it up. 95% of it's paid by the federal government. It's supposed to be a state aid program for the poor and people for the handicapped. And now it's expanded to the point where it really can. Federal government is just paying for almost what seems like universal care. No one's satisfied with the care and no one's satisfied with the price.
The healthcare system in the United States doesn't work. And if we look at why, you're spot on that Barack Obama did a horrific job in expanding the program to areas that it wasn't originally designed for. So Medicaid, as originally designed, is for the most vulnerable, pregnant women, children, permanently disabled. And what President Barack Obama did when he expanded Medicaid is he subsidized states to expand the program to include able-bodied adults of working age. And in so doing, he actually oversubsidized that group to encourage states to take them. So the federal government, believe it or not, is actually paying more for able-bodied childless adults than they are for children and pregnant women. And so when you step back and look at this, this is our opportunity to actually refocus the program on its core purpose, which is to make sure that the most vulnerable amongst us are receiving health care that they deserve and need. But then to also have a check on the program,
right,
to say, for example, work requirements, that if you are an able-bodied, childless adult of working age at a minimum, you should be working 20 hours a week. I'd put it higher, but 20 is the number that it looks like will be in the bill. You have to be working, looking for work, volunteering. What we don't want is a program that simply subsidizes individuals that the program was not originally designed to provide for.
Well, what I understand is, too, that's one area the Republicans are afraid to say, and the president has said over and over again, we're not cutting Medicaid. So how do you message it when that is the real generator of the debt?
Well, a ton of conservatives have fallen into the trap of talking about this in the context of how the liberals talking about it, which is the inputs into the program. How much are we spending? And forgetting that we should be looking at the outputs of the program. How well is the program working? It's the same trap conservatives fall into with education. They allow us to have a conversation about how much we're spending on education, not is the child actually learning to read, write, and do arithmetic and actually learning how to think, not what to think. And so when we look at the Medicaid side of the program, right, we should be asking ourselves, is the program working? Are we in particular lifting people up and out of poverty into self-sustaining jobs? The goal should be assisting in particular able-bodied adults to be coming right off of Medicaid and into private sector insurance.
Most of the states took the heroin that said, how would you like free money from Biden and from Obama? And most of every Democratic state took it, and some Republican states took it. But then you have a new president says, I shouldn't be writing these checks. Who told you that you're going to be getting all this money? So now when it comes to, well, you're going to take it away? Now you're going to be the Republican to take away that money of people that need it most. So I think it's a tough spot, but it looks like Republicans are afraid to message the way you're messaging.
I think that we have a big opportunity to improve the message. But the other is to talk about some of the reforms that are in this legislative text that's going to be voted at the committee level this week, which is let's test the program to make sure that only those who are the most vulnerable are on the program.
You're going to check it twice a month to make sure the vulnerability, that's going to be one.
And there's a simple provision to make sure that the people who are on the Medicaid program are alive. We're not even cross-checking that against what's called the Social Security Death Database, the master list of whether or not Americans are alive or dead. We should be means testing this. I'll give you an extreme example. In the state of California, they don't means test, meaning how wealthy is the individual before they get on Medicaid. So an individual, they got a waiver in past years, and this is our chance to go back and reform the program to force it. So someone that is a multi-million-dollar lottery winner is not on Medicaid being subsidized by the federal government. These are the extreme examples that exist under the current rules because we're not enforcing the program to make sure that it's actually there for the most vulnerable, but not there for individuals that it's not needed for.
So I guess that's got to be the other thing would be the SALT tax, being able to write off state and local taxes. Mike Lawler's on and says, before you say, yeah, we have high taxes, but New York and California does pay the most to the federal government from revenue that they generated. So what is the number that you think the so-called SALT caucus will demand?
Well, all of
right now they're $10,000.
Yeah, all of this is going to roll out today. You have two things at play, the current number being $10,000. And if no action is taken on taxes, that deduction goes all the way back up at the end of the year. I'm of the belief that we shouldn't be subsidizing states with high state and local taxes. That's my broader view. I'd like the $10,000 cap, or I'd bring it down. So I'm opposite some of these guys. Wisconsin's is way too much. But all of these states should be forced to look at the efficiency of their local programs. You can go to a lot of states and say, how many different folks do you need at the municipal level making big bucks? We got to force the states to make those tough decisions. That said, I think we're going to see this number come out later this week. It'll probably be an increase in the SALT cap number. I think that's probably on the table. But the biggest piece of this tax reform bill is going to be making sure the tax cuts that were in place and the reforms in place from 2017 in the original go-around are there again. And that's things like accelerated depreciation,
are they there again, or are they permanent?
Both. We'll see the text later today.
Can you explain that for the layman? Because I understand if you don't cut a certain amount of spending, reconciliation doesn't work, and therefore they just become tax cuts that a Democratic president could just undo.
Yeah, this is all accounting gimmicks that would make any normal person's head explode.
But,
and so what we need to do is make them permanent. And so what the gamesmanship that is played is if you look over the course of 10 years and you say, we're going to save $10 a year, 10 years, you should save $100. But they say, aha, we'll sunset it after 5 years. So what does it cost? $50. It doesn't cost $100. It's gamesmanship. It's like pretending your child's only going to college in the first year, but not going to college in year 2, 3, and 4.
Right.
And so on paper, you pretend as if you don't have a cost or a savings. if we put these in and make them permanent, then people can actually make business decisions to invest in their jobs and in jobs and across the United States of America in a permanent mindset. And so making these reforms permanent so we're not back here where we are today in another 9 or 10 years is going to be essential.
Right. I think it's important, too, because I think a lot of people assume when Republicans got the House, Senate, and the presidency, these tax cuts are going to be permanent. And that's how they invested. So if you guys can't get this done, if House can't deliver by Memorial Day and the Senate by the 4th of July, how long then, and people start getting worried, the market's going to react to that. How long do you think, let's say you guys do you think you'll get your deal done by Memorial Day?
We're going to know a lot more by the end of the week, but I think we're in a position to do that.
Are you going
to
work right to the 23rd?
I don't think we should go home. I think we should just work until this is done. I think this is so absolutely essential for the American people that nobody should break until we're done.
And then how hard is it going to be in reconciliation? Because it doesn't seem like the cuts are the same on the Senate side.
Well, at the end of the day, those are going to have to be merged into one final bill. This is all a bunch of gobbledygook to get around the 60-vote threshold in the Senate. All of this is parliamentary procedural maneuvering to get to a 50-vote threshold in the Senate. But at the end of the day, I think this will come together. The negotiations are ongoing. The American people are starting to see more and more the reforms we can make to get this country back on track. And as President Trump starts to lean in support of key provisions, I think we have a huge opportunity to finalize the deal.
Story in the Axios today says he's obsessed with the midterms already. And where last time he was looking for people that thought a lot like him, he's only looking for people that can win. And he's looking to clear out any primary opponents for anybody. That's why he called up Chris Sununu, even though they had some problems, even though we know that was happened with Governor Brian Kemp. He said, I want you to run for Senate. Neither did, but they want to work with him and their machines to pass. Have you noticed him focusing on the midterms?
I see less maybe on the midterms, but I think Trump 2.0 is really pragmatic on making sure that he has support in the House and in the Senate. And I think what we saw is in the first Trump term, he started off with Republicans and then the House flipped to Democrats. And we saw the train come to a halt. Not only
litigation flying.
Exactly. That's the Dems game, right? Throw every wrench in the wheels and the cogs of progress to try to score a political point. And so what we can't do is allow the Democrats to come back and take the House this upcoming cycle. And so I think it's correct to focus in a sense on the midterms. But the way you really deliver in the midterms is to deliver on the policy front.
Yeah.
And so we can go back and talk about the secure border. And if we combine the border with getting reconciliation done and getting this economy humming again, where American families can start to afford the things that they need, that's the selling point that allows you to go into the midterm and say, we showed you what we can do. We need 2 more years to finish the job.
Understood. Congressman Brian Stile, great to see you, Chairman, I should say. Best of luck in your sprint to Memorial Day.
Thanks for having me in.
All right. The President of the United States is now taking questions before he leaves to Saudi Arabia on the 5 major stories that he just announced, from Pakistan and India to Ukraine and Russia to the China trade deal. And, of course, the pharmaceutical reduction move. The market's liking what he's saying, and it's now over 1,000 points gained, 2.5% overall. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The reason why I ended up in Parkland in the first place, where the shooting happened, obviously, is because of California's housing crisis. That wasn't because of Republican leadership that created that. And it's still a major crisis today because my father couldn't afford to pay our mortgage anymore had he medically retired in California. That's how we ended up in Florida in the first place. So what I'm trying to do with this initiative, with Leaders We Deserve, the organization that we're working with, is to challenge Democrats that we feel like are failing to meet the moment and save congressional seats that don't risk us losing the House, and say to them, look, nobody is entitled to their position of power, because ultimately, the positions of power in this country don't belong to any member of Congress that is out there. They belong to the people that vote them into office. And the people are showing us right now, with our record low approval ratings, that they're not happy with us.
Well, I can tell you, that's David Hogg. And you could go ahead, spin all your wheels you want, see somebody that's not doing an effective job in a safe district. If that's where you want to spend your millions of dollars, go ahead. Very simple. If you're a Democrat center left, pick some spots that you can agree with Trump in, take him on another spot. You'll make headlines there. You do it in a respectful and insightful way. People are past this whole Donald Trump is the oligarch's tour. He's going to cut taxes for the rich and his millionaire friends, billionaire friends. Trump just made so much news all at once. And I do have some additional news. It looks like Israel is reporting that they're now en route to pick up Eden Alexander, who has been freed. This is not going to be the typical take a picture on a stage that Hamas has been doing. Number one, they've been decimated. Number two is this was worked out really by the U.S. with the Israeli cooperation. But this is an American-Israeli hostage. He'll be brought over to Hostage Square, and he's going to be freed. His American family flew over with Adam Bowler, who's in charge of hostage relations with the Trump administration. But Trump, before he left, not only did he make these announcements about the China deal and the pharmaceutical deal and the Thursday one-on-one meeting between Zelensky and Putin, but he also sat there and took questions and then talked about his trip and everything. And then RFK spoke and Dr. Oz spoke and Dr. Bhattacharya spoke about what they could do with pharmaceutical and bring down prices and what else they're doing in terms of nutrition. So here we go again. Out of everything that I'm optimistic about, I think the China deal is going to be on track. I think they want to do that. And then, of course, it's all about the verification on the steel and the IP. But I do think that the Iranian negotiation is fruitless. They're going to drag it out as much as possible. And I think they're going to come around. He's going to come around to Netanyahu's point of view. There's only one thing to do, and that is take out that program. What do you think? BrianKilmeade.com. And just click on comments, and I'll read them out loud next hour, and then we'll get to your calls, I swear. Keep it here. Don't forget, One Nation Sundays at 10 o'clock, and BrianKilmeade.com to see the Fox Nation stage shows in Dayton, in Dallas, and in Richmond. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome, everyone, to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So much going on, at least seven powerful stories that impact many of your lives. Patrick McGee, bottom of the hour, author of Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. It's a fascinating story and all true, kind of building up the Steve Jobs legacy. Charles Gasparino standing by, Fox Business correspondent, author of Go Woke, Go Broke. And we're following a bunch of stories now, including the President of the United States about to embark on the Middle Eastern trip after doing an hour press conference and culminating with the signing of a pharmaceutical executive order. So before we get to Charlie, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
President Putin is open for peace negotiations without any preconditions. And this is what he was proposing for the last couple of weeks.
Massive news overseas.
That we are ready for negotiations.
Massive news overseas. One-on-one ceasefire talks are set to take place Thursday. Putin and Zelensky. Do you believe it? We'll see. It was Putin who called it. And it was Trump and Zelensky who may have called this bluff.
Number two. Look, a lot of Democrats are not happy that he's reemerging as the party's trying to find its way. There's still lingering frustration with how he handled 2024. He's going to go out there and defend himself and defend his record.
Yep, Dems agree. Joe's comeback is as bad as possible. And left thrash their way through a post-election malaise while they go after people who express moderate views. Go figure.
Number one.
We come to agreement that our reciprocal tariff rate will go down to 10% on the United States side, so it goes down 115%. We enter into a 90-day pause period for negotiations.
So there you go. That was our trade representative talking about the big news. U.S. and China have framed out a deal in Switzerland after two intense days of talks. They have set up a mechanism to go over all disputes and to continue to iron out the details. We don't have a lot, but we know it's going to be 30% tariffs for China, with 20% because they can't control fentanyl or the chip refuse to, and then 10% on U.S. goods. What does that mean for supply chain? What does it mean for our shelves and prices? Let's bring in Charles Gasparino. Charles, bring us behind the scenes. Why do you think they made so much progress in 2 days?
Mutually assured destruction is the best way to put it. Their economy needs us. Our economy needs them. None of this was good for either side. I mean, listen, we sit around and we pick on globalists all the time and globalism as a bad thing. A lot of our viewers echo those remarks. I'm certainly a critic of globalism. But in this case, you know, it kind of worked. And here's why. Because of globalism, because of this sort of mutual need for each other, we're able to cut a deal here. That's one reason why we're probably not going to go to war with China, because we kind of, our economies are interlinked, whether it's good or bad. You know, no doubt that they got the better end of the stick for a while, and that's sort of changing, and Trump's doing a good job of, you know, trying to change that. But we're linked, and you know, and here's kind of why we needed to cave on this as well. You know, those containers were coming back empty from overseas, from China. Small businesses, which are like one of the key components of the MAGA coalition, the small businessman, small businesswoman, was about to get crushed. They source a lot of their products when they manufacture them here. I mean, I know a lot of people. I know someone, for example, that does baby strollers and carriages and stuff like that. Those certain parts, whether we like it or not, they're not made here. I mean, it's going to take years to create those plants. All that stuff was either coming back empty, you know, you're not getting them, or they were coming back with massive price increases, which made it untenable. Right. Those businesses were going to go out of business. I mean, a lot of them were talking that.
You say both sides blinked.
Yeah. I mean, they need us, too. They need our export. They need to export stuff to us. There's no doubt. They have an export-driven economy. It's, you know, depending on who you speak to on this, it's either in a great recession or, you know, at least a slowdown. They have a lot of poverty still. That's part of their, you know, this whole thing about, what do they call it, the Belt and Road thing, whatever it was called.
Yes.
That whole thing was to eliminate poverty. China still has a poverty problem. So, and, you know, they have a middle class, and, you know, and people are getting restless with the economy there. So, you know, they needed us. So when you have two sides that need each other, compromise can come. Now, the question is, now this is a pause, right? You know, everything kind of is normalized to a certain extent for the next 90 days. We have to see exactly what the fine print says at the end. But it's kind of a good thing if you believe in you know, some degree of free trade, because things, you know, it's a better deal for us. It's a better deal for them.
Right.
And two sides are talking. But it does speak to the notion that globalism does work. I mean, there's something about this where we all need each other. The chances of us going to war and trying to kill each other are less.
So I think
that's the way it was supposed to work. Now, we just didn't exert a strong enough hand over the years. We just kind of let them run amok. And, you know, those days are over, obviously, with Trump.
Well, I mean, phase one of the deal, people want to be critical of it. How can you be critical? Before they even signed it, we hit it with the pandemic, and Biden didn't enforce it. So now it's about enforcement, and it also is about us waking up and understanding we can't depend on our magnets and our metals from China, ever. I don't care how cheap it is. It's not in our national security interest. That's got to be decided over the next 90 days.
Yeah, I know, but where are we going to get it from? You know, I mean, Ukraine, yes, maybe.
We got to build our own refineries.
Do we have our own refineries? We got to build them. It's going to cost. So remember, this stuff is a reset. You know, there's never a straight line to anything. It's necessary. I mean, you know, here's the sort of, again, the good news here is that we actually have a president that's grappling with these issues. I mean, I was listening to Joe Biden on The View. It was the most pathetic display I've ever heard of a rationalization. I mean, the guy could barely speak. I mean, how do you have a president that can barely speak? And, you know, can you imagine him dealing with all the stuff that Trump's dealing with right now? I mean, and then Kamala Harris was so unqualified. I mean, the American people got they traded up here. There's no doubt. Now, the question is for Trump, you know, was it worth all the indigestion? Could he have had a summit with Xi and hashed this out without all the market going nuts and, you know?
It depends what happens next, Charlie. Because, for example, I want to see the India deal. I want to see the Japanese deal. I want to see the EU deal.
How about the UK deal? The UK deal, if you really look at it, was pretty 9. I don't know. I looked at it, and I was just trying to see where the there was. There was not much there. So the question really is, Brian, was it all worth it? And, you know, so that's part of the downside of Trumpism. There's a lot of, you know, what they used to say, sound and fury. I don't want to say signify nothing, but you just wonder at the end, was it all worth it? Could we have done this without, you know, going nuts for 2 months?
Well, and, I mean, we did about 4 trade deals in his last 4 years, and now we're going to end up doing maybe a dozen at least before July 4th.
Was it worth it? I mean, did we get that much out of it?
Well, here's what Peter Mendelsohn said, the UK ambassador to the US.
Right.
Cut 5.
And it reflects the sort of amazing, confident relationship between our two countries and the cordial relationship personally between the president and the prime minister. Now we can build on it. I mean, we can look to other trade barriers that we can bring down so as to create more jobs in the United States. And also something very close to my heart, I want to see us build a close US-UK technology partnership to invest and build future industries in both our countries, which are science-based and driven by technology.
Right. So they opened up additional trade and avenues, and they create relationships, and we got to know who our friends are, and they're one of them.
I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of that was a lot of talk. I looked at the deal. The deal was, Brian, I'm telling you, the deal was pretty light on details and just not, it was not, you know, I just wondered if it was worth it when I looked at that UK deal. This is a little different. I mean, what's different about China is that if we didn't talk ourselves off the ledge of both sides, it would have been really nasty with the economy. I am telling you that businesses, not, and I told you about the small business, but major retailers, they went into Trump's office. They went into White House, and I'm paraphrasing here, but from what I said, they said, from what I understand from people who spoke with them, they said this: we're not going to lay off people now. We're not going to raise our prices now. You know, we're going to eat the cost for the next couple of months. But if you, or the next like 6 to 8 weeks, basically is what they said. If you keep going with China, you will see layoffs. You will see massive price increases.
Right.
That. You know, so remember this thing that we did came. There was a cost that was about to be paid, and that cost was about to start like today. You know, that was when this stuff was starting to reach a critical stage. So we both have a very vested interest,
right,
in ending this thing. Now the question becomes again, Brian, was it all worth it? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. But this is a UK deal. They scrapped the 20% tariff on U.S. beef, so our agriculture people are happy. The U.S. to export $5 billion in products like machine.
Do they buy that much beef from us? I don't think so. I'm just saying. They run it. We run.
They look like a hearty group. U.S. to export $5 billion in products like machinery and ethanol.
They have a trade surplus. We have a trade surplus with them.
10% on British import remains. The U.K. can export 100,000 cars to the U.S. at 10% tariff instead of 25%.
You own a Jaguar?
Not yet. U.S. to eliminate levies on steel.
A Bentley? No, Bentley. You own a Bentley or a Rolls.
Listen, we got to –
This is when you start, like, scraping it, you're like, oh, what the hell? You know, what is this? Well, it's not that big a deal, you know? I'm just telling you that look at the fine print. It's not that much there. And the question again becomes: was it all worth it? Maybe it was. I don't know. I don't think I need to have a snap decision on this.
I'm thinking yes, but here's one thing I got to answer. I got to ask you, Charlie. Do you have a problem with the president accepting a free luxury plane from Qatar?
No, and here's why. This is like a manufactured story, in my view. I mean, and I'm telling you, I'll get hit from a lot of people with this. Friends of mine who say, "Oh, this is outrageous! They're buying the presidents." You know. I've been covering corporate scams and conflicts of interest and quid pro quos my entire career. Here's where that gets really bad. When I have to look at campaign contribution records, which I do a lot, and you know, study it and look at it sideways to see who gave the contribution and then match that with the pro quo, with the quo, right, with the payoff. That's when it's not disclosed, when no one knows. No one could debate it. We know this. The president announced it. It's kind of like his crypto business that everybody's going nuts over, right?
We know he's got a crypto business. If he does stuff that enriches himself, we can debate it. There could be laws passed. If the Democrats get in power, who God knows, maybe they'll impeach him again. But you understand what I'm saying. It's totally disclosed. This is what you need. You need disclosure and you need debate. So I just don't care that he's got a plane. By the way, the guy's got his own plane. So he's got another one. I mean, I don't know. There's, you know, how many planes?
Yeah, but he says it's our.
You're really going to buy Donald Trump off with a plane?
No, that's true. But I think he loves luxury. Number one, he doesn't like it. He does not like Air Force One. The new one should have been built already. He started. He commissioned 4 years ago.
He likes luxury. Good. I'm glad we like a president that likes luxury. That has good taste.
Well,
you know, we had.
And he says it's the country's, not his.
Yeah, I you know. And by the way, who cares?
Thank you. I agree with you.
Is Qatar going to buy us off? I'm telling you. You know, I'll write about it if they get something free. Then we can, you know, match the quid and the pro quo, right? Then we could talk about it. Mm-hmm. But right now, if it's disclosed, if we can talk about it, you're asking me the question, right? It's not like we had to find Hunter Biden's laptop to know he was doing business with in a foreign country while his old man was there. Remember, you had to put all that together?
I do remember.
That's where conflicts of interest get really – and I'm not saying what he did was the height of illegality. It's swampy, right? But you have to put it all together, and it wasn't disclosed. This is totally disclosed. If there's one thing about Donald Trump,
you get everything.
He discloses everything.
Yep.
Right? I mean, he's got a crypto business. Okay. He's going light on crypto regulation. Well, he's got a crypto business. He's going to make money on that. We can write about that and talk about it, and you can ask him about it in your interview, and you hold his feet to the fire on it because it's totally disclosed. And by the way, he could get in trouble for it if it violates the law and there's a Democrat. I mean, this is how it's supposed to work.
Right.
You know, it's not, you know, if it's hidden, it's another story.
Well, real quick, do you have a view on the prescription drug executive order?
The only thing I will tell you is that we should posit that, you know, none of this is, you know, the medical system is hardly the height of capitalism, right? So when you start talking about, you know, executive orders that are stopping drug prices. Remember, we're in a system where you have Obamacare. There's all these sort of irregularities that screw up market forces. That's just keep that in mind. That being said, wage and price controls, the history of them, have always been bad. It's always led to rationing and really bad things like less innovation. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have gone there, but I have to read more about this. But just so you know, Brian, when was the last time you heard wage and price controls work? Kamala Harris like suggested something like this on food prices, but during the campaign, as I recall, and you know the whole world laughed at her, right? And there was a huge debate about how these things don't work and you know why people keep prices of certain drugs high and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's much more complicated than people just getting ripped off. But to be determined. But remember, when we deal with the medical system, none of this is capitalism. I would rather the president focus on, you know, getting the economy going and then dealing with the medical system. Mm-hmm. The health system.
These guys should do a lot.
Concerted way.
All right. Charlie, always great. Thanks so much. Not against the plane, but it's both sides blinked on the trade deal. He is Charlie Gasparino of Fox Business. Watch him all day. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is a serious problem for Democrats. Less than one in four Democrats under 30 say they're proud to be an American. 54% say they're embarrassed by it. Embarrassed? Like America's your mom picking you up at school? You're embarrassed to be an American? Well, guess what? The feeling's mutual because you have no perspective.
Bill Maher's 100% right, and those numbers should embarrass everybody. And they would have been accepted a few years ago when everyone was saying Kaepernick was brave to take a knee. Now people realize, are you kidding me? Remember they said putting a flag on your car was triggering in certain neighborhoods? Now that seems like a joke, but that was where the country was right now. I love that Bill Maher is pushing back on that, and he was over the weekend too. And I think we get back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Democratic, the whole Democratic Party and where they're coming from and what we learned this weekend. You saw Congresswoman Crockett, people love to book her, but she is so detrimental to the future of that party. Her attitude, her swagger, her statements, just so detrimental to Democrats being legitimately leaders. But we are watching some good news stories here. Eden Alexander, the last American held against his will that's living in Gaza, has been freed. We have not seen him yet, but evidently he's in Israeli custody.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Joe Biden appeared on The View where he said he wasn't surprised Kamala Harris lost the election because the only thing that surprises Joe Biden are the words that come out of his own mouth.
Right. Now it's suddenly okay, right, to make fun of Joe Biden. Now it's really cool. Let's mock the guy and let's write a few books about him and still be in denial on other times. At least the comedians are coming out and speaking. But the one thing that struck me about The View is that there you say, well, you know, the press looked the other way and you saw Alex Thompson at the White House Correspondents' Dinner come forward and say, you know, we got to do a better job at reporting the cognitive failures of Joe Biden. You're still not reporting the cognitive failures of Joe Biden. Is anyone writing the story that he was slow at The View? He was slow at the BBC. Yes, he had some answers, but you had to listen. I had to put my ear next to the TV to hear what he was saying. I mean, that is also part of a dementia. And you had his wife on the stage, like, quickly following up to what he had to say. And I go back to what Mark Halperin said, that Biden Inc. is drying up and nobody works in that family. And they're counting on him to come forward. But nobody really wants to hear from him. Jared Moskowitz weighed in and over the weekend, and nobody really wants to hear what he had to say. He's got to go away. And I think it's pretty clear. As I think that Matt Gorman also brought up, too, he's a Republican strategist on Meet the Press. And I just thought he was right on the money here when he said that the people, the voters, notice he didn't say Democrat or Republican, just don't like when people don't say what we all see. Cut to 16.
I don't think Democrats are fully prepared for what's about to hit them. It's going to be a drumbeat of news over weeks. The first book, the first one drops in 9 days. Excerpts, I'm told, as soon as early this week. It reminds me a lot of what our party went through with the Iraq War. Mm. If you want to move past it and maintain your credibility, you have to first acknowledge it. Remember, voters were well ahead of the media, Democrats, elites, on whether Biden's age was an issue before the June debate. And I don't think they take kindly to being deceived for kind of craven political experiences. So I think they're going to have to reckon with that before we get to 2028.
Well, the voters will make them reckon with it. And they just got to come out and call him out and say, I should have said something earlier. But I love this. Some of these lawmakers are saying, well, I didn't really meet with them one-on-one much, so I wouldn't have known. But I just see him at the debate, and that just really alerted me. You know the rumor you got to the White House yesterday? Was he able to put a sentence together? Did you hear repeated the same story three times verbatim in front of donors? You hear that one time, it would stand out. If that happened with Trump, believe me, someone would leak it out. Safir Kapoor was on Meet the Press, an NBC senior national political reporter. Cut 14.
There's a good argument and a bad argument that President Biden can make in terms of his reemergence on the national stage. The good argument is about inflation and costs. Trump did oversell when he blamed Biden entirely for costs. Trump said he would bring it down on day one. It didn't quite happen. It's not really that simple. It's a structural global problem. I think President Biden can make that point.
Yeah, but that is, nobody thinks inflation ends on day one. Doing things necessary to bring it down. Now, people didn't like Liberation Day, but everything the president's doing now is to bring it down, beginning with oil, gas, and energy. And then he's working on all the crazy things like the bird flu, the price of eggs. That came down. Overall inflation is down slightly. So it's going in the right direction. But Joe Biden saying he would have won when nobody thought he could win and not one poll indicated he would win is a joke. Cut 15.
The bad argument is if he argues he made the right decision to run for re-election and that he very, very much could have won, which he's suggesting. There's no data, there's no polling to suggest that he would have won. All the polling suggests that he would have gotten clobbered much worse than Vice President Kamala Harris did. And if he pursues this argument, I think we're going to hear more and more from Democrats who are quietly angry about the fact that they think he misled them into saying that he had another 4 years of him in this and that he could do another campaign.
Right. And see, I don't need, you know, I'm on The View and those ladies like him, I guess, or are afraid to contradict him, I guess, and said, yeah, you would have won. I had 7 million more votes last time. Those people just stayed home. Well, we have a lot of questions about the 7 million votes. And I do think Joe Biden got the most. But why would he get 82 million votes and Barack Obama got 65 million votes? By the way, Donald Trump hit an all-time high that election cycle, too. So there were weird things with the pandemic. Maybe I hope will never happen again. But I asked Charlie Kirk. I would say that he meets more people per capita basis, younger people, than anyone really much over the last three cycles. Started off as a 22-year-old dropout of college who started running his organization. And now it is, it's a real force. And it's helped give President Trump that younger vote. He joined me on Sunday at 10 o'clock on One Nation. And I asked him about the Biden interview, what his statements were and what his thoughts were now that he's out and about again talking to people after the election, debating students in real time. Cut 20.
On display was one of the greatest examples of media malpractice in the last couple decades. People wonder why the media is at all-time low trust levels. This is why. Not only did the media refuse to cover Joe Biden's mental decline, they covered it up. And President Trump deserves a lot of credit for trusting his instincts for that June debate. Remember, there was a lot of controversy around that. President Trump, Joe Biden, why are they debating so early? Why are they debating in June? Is it going to help Joe Biden out? In reality, of course, it got Joe Biden out of the race, but it did something even more important than that, is it showed the American people how dishonest the mainstream media has become, about how they called us names. They smeared us, they slandered us, they canceled us, they censored us because we were noticing Joe Biden's mental decline. He was not even able to answer a question about his mental decline without Jill Biden interjecting. So I think President Trump deserves credit for a lot of things, including exposing the frauds the mainstream media had become the last couple of
right.
years.
Right. And Al, I just want to see these next two books. I mean, this is what Jill Biden said. None of those people that wrote the books are inside the White House. Well, fine. But the sources were, you idiot. What do you think? Do you think Watergate couldn't have been written because Bob Woodward didn't work for Richard Nixon? I mean, what are you talking about? It's called an investigation using sources, many of which are on the record. And we saw that you guys were invisible during those 4 years. So now you have President Trump literally with eight major stories. Now, we are watching this. Evidently, Eden Alexander, the New Jersey resident dual citizen who was captured on October 7th, has been released. And there's been no swap. There's no prisoner swap. This was done, really, I believe, with Adam Bowler, who's working the hostage situation. He got that job from the president of the United States when he took over. Adam Bowler had a lot to do with the Abraham Accords, his good contacts in the area. I think it had a lot to do with Qatar helping out. But Alexander, who is just freed after 584 days, that is the number one story that we, I don't know why CNN's in a commercial, but that is the number one story. We hope to see him soon. It didn't have the sensationalism of Hamas taking a bow. Why? Because Hamas is decimated, I'm telling you. And unless this is what Netanyahu has said, unless the rest of the hostages, 23 of which we believe are still alive, are released, he's going into Gaza, taking and holding land. So look out. I wouldn't mind aid getting in there, but I think first and foremost, we got to finish this thing off. There's a little bit of a division. The Houthi rebels, Eden Alexander thing, the deals were cut without really informing Israelis, fine with that. You got to do your own thing. You got to work for the U.S. Doesn't mean relations are damaged. And I just do think that if it comes down to it, and if we continue to talk to you, the Iranians, 2 or 3 or 4 months now, they're acting on their own. We'll give you the latest on that. Just to finish up the Democratic talking point, what they have is they have a moderate in Jared Moskowitz and Ruben Gallego, who says he's a moderate. That's how he got elected in Arizona in a very Republican, that's become a Republican state again. He says because he came on Fox and Friends too, and I hope to have him on this show. He came on talking about some of the things that he agrees with Trump on. Number one, he does think the border was broken. He did say, and didn't say enough, but did say that things had to be done, and now he notices improvements. I want to see this. How do you feel about this hostage coming out? If you are a Democrat and you want credibility, this whole thing about fighting everything, you got to pick your spots to fight. You don't just walk around taking swings at people on issues that were not controversial. Let's hear about it. And if you feel like the Chinese trade deal looks good to you, because the market certainly thinks it looks good, say it. It's up 917 points. It's been over 1,000 points really since it's opened up. All the money's back that you lost in your 401k in your retirement. And this is in 3 weeks. Say it. And then if you don't like something, go ahead. But just know that if you start calling balls and strikes, I think people will respond. Finally, the last thing I want to say and play on Joe Biden, but we'll talk about it a lot because more revelations are going to surprise us from these books. Here's David Brooks of the New York Times on PBS. Cut 17.
He's a proud man with a chip on his shoulder who feels himself under attack, frankly, in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And so he wants to stand up for himself. What we want from our presidents is not more politics. What we want from our president is somebody who's post-politics, who can speak to us from a higher level, not in the partisan mud. And I would say, be post-political, rise above it, and don't get back, and don't try to fight old battles.
And that's what he's doing now. And look, Joe Biden really doesn't have any power base. He wasn't that popular before. He says he thinks he's a great guy. David Brooks was a conservative columnist. He's not exactly William Sapphire. I think he's a nice guy, but I think that Trump has totally turned him off to the point where he doesn't want to even be a conservative anymore, which makes me reevaluate stuff I read and hear from him. Just he changed his points of view, that's all. Just like, for example, if you go to Drudge, do you think that's the same site you used to have? Absolutely not. It's a totally different site. Understand it. They want everything negative about Trump. They don't really write much positive about Republicans. It's a more better financed Huffington Post now without any paywalls. So we'll see what happens. Again, we're watching that story about Eden Alexander. I'll take a timeout and come back, and maybe we'll get our first glimpse of him, and we'll discuss that also when we come back. The latest on Ukraine and Russia. I think that Russia must be surprised that Donald Trump and Zelensky said yes to their offer without a ceasefire. I'll explain. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
If we speak about ceasefire, what are we going to do with shipments of weapons coming every day from the United States and from European countries?
So you want those what weapons are we gonna stopped? Do?
Otherwise, coming it will in. Be advantage for Ukraine.
So that is Dmitry Peskov. He's the Kremlin press secretary. And to his credit, he was speaking to Western press when asked, are you going to do the ceasefire for 30 days? He goes, why should I do that? Are you going to stop sending weapons in? Well, are you going to stop buying them from Iran? Are you going to stop making weapons during those 30 days? So, I mean, they import all their North Korean soldiers. Are you going to stop taking Yemeni soldiers off the battlefield? Are you going to stop taking North Koreans for 30 days? So, I mean, we know the answers to this, but he does it in such a diminutive way, like this timid way, like, what are we the problem? So out of nowhere, you see Vladimir Putin call a press conference and say, no ceasefire. I want direct talks one-on-one with President Zelensky. Now, a couple of days prior, European leaders said, no talks without a ceasefire. Trump hears this, put on Truth Social, let's do it. Talk to Zelensky. Zelensky says, I'll do it. The question is, does he show up? Do you believe that he will show up one-on-one? I'm not too sure. But keep in mind, too, Russia's got a huge problem because they have no credibility. They want to get back. I believe they want some economic investment. That could be a big incentive that we give. But they have no credibility about holding their word. Here's what Tom Cotton said, the senator from Arkansas, who's chairman of Armed Services, Cut 30.
What President Trump wants, and I think what America should ask, is for European leaders to be prepared to step up and do exactly what they're asking the United States to do, to impose sanctions on Russia, to stop taking Russian gas, to freeze and ultimately use the hundreds of billions of dollars of Russian assets in their banks to help support Ukraine and then ultimately help rebuild Ukraine. So President Trump is prepared to lead, as he has been, on getting a kind of ceasefire or armistice in the Ukraine war, but we need to make sure that Europe is doing at least as much on their own part that they ask the United States to do.
I think so. And I think that they're in an interesting spot. They used to want to grab the headlines from the U.S. Does it look like the U.S. is doing too much? Now they say, the U.S. is backing off. We could get credit, but are we able to pull anything off? I like the image. I love the image of the German, French, and British leaders meeting in Kyiv. They're the good guys in this. David, you're in Georgia. David, a lot going on in the Trump world.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to say big thanks to you and all that you've done from podcast to radio. You're incredible, and you deserve nothing but the best from here on out, man.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. Just trying to keep up in Trump world. He's got an incredible pace he's setting. There's things that are happening by Pakistan and India. Couldn't expect that. But trying to tackle all these big problems at one time is pretty amazing. Sandra in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Oh, hi, Brian. Brian, I was thinking about the mayor in Newark, New Jersey, Roz Barak. I'm a resident there. And to me, he has lost respect, not gained respect for this thing that he did. He trespassed against a very, very nice thing that we have in Newark, a place for people to go that are behaving very badly. And this place cost $1 billion, and it has 1,000 beds, and it even offers a drug treatment section to treat people who are so troubled. So look, I don't like what he did, and even Jack Cettarelli said this man should be focusing on the schools, the failing students and the parents, and he should be focusing on the airports, and he should be focusing on crime in the streets, not pulling this thing that he did to get his name out there. Right, Brian?
No, I hear you. I think what you're doing, what Sandra's referring to, is the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, along with some lawmakers, decided to create havoc in front of Newark's ICE Center. They didn't like that it was there, and they wanted to check out the conditions. They also wanted to block people from going there. And the mayor of Newark put a tractor trailer or a crane right in front of the entrance and was being obstructive. And then when they told, when ICE said, you got to settle down and wait, you have to make an appointment to go in, they started trying to bull their way in. And you have this stocky female lawmaker, who's a lawbreaker, put her head down and steamrolled through like a running back in the NFL. It's crazy. It was mischaracterized as body slammed someone. No, she slammed into somebody is right. So they did, ICE kicked them all out, made them apply for a tour. They got a tour, and they find it's absolutely no problem. So ICE can do their job. I don't think that should be an issue. And that's just one of the other distractions. So what were you doing this weekend? Well, in order to get to win back my political constituents, I went over and tried to unmask an ICE facility where, if you're with ICE, not only you're illegal, you committed a crime. So you want to make sure everyone's okay? Fine. You said you heard you were children in there? Then ask. Rachel Campos Duffy got a tour right after her show yesterday. Other people got a tour. AOC is going to go down there and get a tour today. She's going to do something crazy. She's going to tape when she's not supposed to, find out that the water fountains are too high or too low, and she's going to complain about that. But that's her option. I don't know why they're digging in on all these cases on the border. And now I don't think anyone's paying attention at all. In Newark, New Jersey, if you ask me the big story there, it's how come we can't get planes in and out on time. How about that? That's the bigger story there. So a lot going on. I mean, we're seeing now Eden Alexander, we've just gotten word, has been handed over to the Red Cross. So he is probably an hour or so away, if that, from being hooked up with his family first time in over 580 days since he was taken that horrific day. And who knows, and you could just imagine the horrific things he's seen, what he's been forced to experience living in those tunnels beneath the earth while Hamas tortures their own people and tries to fight to the death against the IDF. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Make sure you go to BrianKilmeade.com for the Fox Nation stage tours and watch Fox and Friends every day from 6 to 9. And keep it here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.